Welcome to Theatre Voice.
Thank you.
I'm talking to director Michael Walling from Border Crossings, whose show Consumed has just opened at the Tara Arts Centre. Welcome to Theatre Voice, Michael.
Thanks so much.
Great. Now, the show is a three-hander, which has been described as, what is it, sex, money and the World Wide Web.
Yeah, it's a tagline, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's about the story of a Chinese businessman from America who goes to China to do business, falls in love and sort of returns home. Well, he doesn't quite fall in love. He arranges for somebody else to fall in love.
It's more complicated than
yes,
that.
Yes, okay. Well, anyway, why don't you tell us how the show was put together?
Okay. And it's a devised piece. It kind of has to be because the sort of work I'm interested in doing is work which is about the 21st century and about the globalized world that we live in. And so it's very important for us that we have the different voices of different nationalities, different communities, and therefore different languages in there. And we wanted to work again with Shanghai Dramatic Arts Center and with Chinese culture, really as a follow-up to Reorientations, which we did in 2010.
And we have a separate interview of that. You gave an interview to Theatre Voice around that time.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Song Ruhui, who was in that show, very pleasingly, at the end of the run in Shanghai, said she would be very interested to work on another devised production with us, but one which was perhaps more compact and which was about giving a voice to people of her Chinese generation. And I thought that was a really, really interesting idea. And so we started by thinking about how that might be approached, because one of the big challenges is language, in that there are very few people who are Chinese in their 40s and above who have good English. And eventually we thought, well, if we can find one, then that person might be able to be in some way a conduit between Hui and an English or English speaking actor. And eventually we found Ning Li. And then we did a workshop period last year for about a month in Shanghai, just developing ideas, playing, particularly playing around language to begin with, and also around new technologies and how they affect communication. And we started to find that the play was becoming more and more about communication, and therefore also about this eternal triangle which knocks on from the communication issue within the way in which the piece is constructed. And it's a long, slow process, and we did, you know, a month's workshop there, and we then had the best part of a year working on the dramaturgy and sending emails backwards and forwards and thinking about it and shaping that into what then became a rehearsal script, which then got butchered in rehearsal, and we kept at it, and no doubt it's not finished yet.
So can we just talk a little bit more about it? You said that one of your actors, Hui?
Yes, that's the woman. Yeah.
Yes, the woman. She is from Shanghai. She doesn't actually speak English.
That's right.
And in the show, we don't really hear her speak English. She speaks a
couple of words. Yeah.
So in terms of working as actors together, because you've got another Chinese, American, English-speaking Chinese actor, and then you've got European actor who speaks completely English.
Yes.
How did that process work, like trying to work together collaboratively without a language in common, if you like?
Well, yeah, I think what you always do with these sorts of challenges is you turn them to your advantage. So, we would set up an improvisation where Hui and it was Tony Guilfoyle at the time in the devising process would be working together on a scene. And, of course, the misunderstandings and so on were all absolutely real. And, you know, I don't think you could write that in the way in which it came out. And of course, we always have translators in the room. Sometimes during the workshop, that was down to Ning Li and to Dory Dung, our video artist, who is also bilingual. During rehearsals, we've had a series of specialist translators coming in, the difficulty being that it's sort of one day at a time because they, because of their availabilities, and so you've got people who don't really know the play or what's going on or what you're doing, and they're trying to make sense of what's actually quite subtle, nuanced conversation. So there's a lot of misunderstandings, but in a way that's part of the point, that we're negotiating both in the process of making the piece and in the piece itself, how people who seem apparently miles and miles and miles apart can come together, can create something together, can operate within the same space. And you know, this is obviously a much larger question than just making a play. It's the question that the world is having to deal with at the moment, is how do we jointly inhabit the space which now has become so small that we're all in the same one.
Just to clarify, you mentioned Tony Guilfoyle, and his role in the show is now taken by
Serge Sorich.
Oh, I see. Okay, so he's the kind of American character.
No, he's the English character.
Is he English?
Yeah,
sorry,
John Bartholomew. Yeah,
I just assumed he was American for some reason. I don't know why.
No, the character's British.
My mistake in that case. You
okay,
know?
Well,
never mind.
Well,
suspension of disbelief in the theatre.
There's a whole American line to it as well, because yep. Ning Li's character, John Tong, or Tong Chung, has been in the States, and so his English is more Americanized, and then John Bartholomew is English. And I don't know why I cast the Croat. It's kind of crazy in a way, isn't it? But I think it's more to do with his acting presence than his nationality.
Yeah, he's very good. In fact, all the three cast members are very good in the show. So, you know, you start off with this devising process. You're working in two languages. And you want to speak to a younger Chinese generation. Mm. I mean, their lives, which are a mixture of new technology, reality, and so on. And in terms of your plot structure for the show, you know, it's signposted by short chapters, ideas. I mean, did you have an idea of a story or a plot when you were devising it, or did that just... Okay.
It arose. We knew that we wanted to deal with language. We knew we wanted to deal with globalization, and it was quite early on an idea to work around people in the business world, stroke banking, because, well, I think there have been several crucial dates in recent Chinese history in relation to the West, and one of them was 2008 with the financial collapse, because that was the moment when China realized that actually the West didn't have to be the model anymore, that in fact they were doing rather better by themselves. And so we were interested in that, and also, I suppose, in the kind of instability going on in that financial world, which seemed to reflect some of the sense of instability we were examining in the lives of the characters. For a while, we found that quite difficult, because it's not a world that any of us are particularly acquainted with, and so it was very hard to improvise. And in fact, for a while, we thought that perhaps the characters ought to be making commercials or something, because it was closer to our own way of being. But it didn't have the edge. So in the end, we went off and interviewed lots of people and did a lot of research so that we could make that truthful. So we knew something of the worlds that we wanted them to come from. And of course, we could draw off ourselves, which doesn't mean the characters are the actors in any way, I hasten to add. But there are things like Li having left China in the 80s, gone to America, married an American, which inform how the characters have developed, and that it's quite useful to have that kind of combination of people. As the story arose out of a sense of who the characters were, how they might coincide, and therefore things that might happen along the way. And so we made, to begin with, quite a lot of different incidents, and then started to look at whether those might string together into a narrative. And you start doing things like you change around who's who within a story, within a particular scene. So, well, but if it was her talking to him about that, that would be a very different scene, but that might fit after that. And so eventually a narrative kind of evolves. And then the chapter titles came really quite late in the process, as a way of distancing and ironizing it a little bit.
But also, I guess, because you're having technology is part of the story, and you actually use technology in the story. I mean, we have a lot of projected imagery, and some of it also looked like live. Were you doing something live there, where there was a couple of sleeping on the floor, and you sort of see that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's very ambitious to do.
Well, it was the other start point, and Dory, our video artist, was the other person who came with us into the workshop. So that was there as an element from the beginning, because it was the other start point, really, in relation to reorientations, was that when we were in Shanghai performing that show, I became very conscious of the way in which the younger Chinese audience were constantly watching it through cameras or through phones.
Really?
And it's as if they needed an electronic filter to allow them to engage with the production. And I thought this was very symptomatic of something very strange which is going on in the world right now, which is a distancing from the live body. And I think a lot of the ways in which we think we're getting closer in terms of communication, you know, the web, texting, blah, 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 are actually having the effect of isolating us more and more. And so that coincided with the sense of linguistic isolation and therefore of a kind of loneliness. And I think the loneliness of powerful figures in the banking world who are actually making a lot of money is very interesting. Early in my career I was lucky enough to do all the Mozart da Ponte operas, and one thing I learned from Mozart is that to make really interesting drama, you take the people who you think you don't like and you give them the best music.
Right.
And I wanted to find, in a world which I find alien and cold, I wanted to try and find the humanity, and therefore try and relate to those people. And the technology actually provided a really useful way into that. You cite the live cameras, and it's true, it is all it is quite complicated. It's also quite simple. I mean, they're just tiny little webcams sitting on the end of microphone stands.
Right.
And you can do quite a lot with them.
I see.
Yeah.
I mean, we can just describe it, because the set is very simple. You have some tables and some white leather chairs. And
The tops of the tables flip up to turn into projection screens, so they can either be small, or you put all three together, you get a big filmic projection screen. It's deliberately very fluid, so that the imagery changes all the time, which is just to do with keeping it dramatically alive and exciting. It is also to suggest that they're living in a world where they're constantly surrounded by the electronic image, and that these this virtual world, this world which is not quite physical, is the means through which they communicate. So in some ways the piece is about the effect of electronics, and of course it uses, as you say, electronics to make its point.
And also just talking about the plot structure,
yeah,
the way that the story is constructed as the audience sees it, is that it's not what you might call a dramatic... it's not what you might call a conventional plotting idea of the story. Because, as I said, they were like small chapters, and then somewhere in the middle of the story, you get a sense that these three characters may know each other, or
in other ways.
So I found it very interesting how that.
Well, it's deliberately non-linear.
So
you get the 1980s scenes actually very late in the play, what has happened before, because they don't know either. You know, the two Chinese characters don't know that they know each other from the past, and we've just done a spoiler, really, haven't we? It's all right. It doesn't matter.
I found that way of developing the storyline very, very interesting. Also, what's very interesting is that your show is bilingual. It's got English and Chinese, and none of the bilingual stuff is actually translated for the audience, except when you come to a point in the story where it needs to be translated.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It was part of the whole process of playing with language, was how we work with the audience and language. And there are times when translation is included within the play, like the scenes on Skype where Tong Zheng is translating between the two of them. There are times towards the end of the play when it's super titled because, yes, as you say, it needs to be for the audience to understand. But I think it's also very interesting sometimes to work with language when the audience doesn't understand, or some of the audience doesn't, because of course we had Chinese speakers in there
last night.
We always do, and so you get some of the drama that's going on the stage is also reflected in the audience, and you know, people are laughing at different moments, and I find that quite energizing. I'm also very interested in language as music, and you know, what sometimes you can hear a language which you don't understand rationally but you can understand something of what's going on in that language emotionally. And so you get a sense of what might perhaps be being said. And I think that's that has huge dramatic potential. And one of my favourite bits in the play is when Su Chen, Hui's character, is talking to John after the lovemaking scene you've been talking about, and clearly something has been released in her, but he can't understand what she's talking about at all, and he's finally compelled to phone Tong Chong as a result of that. And her performance in that scene, I think, is amazing. And because it's enigmatic, and at the same time you absolutely know the depth of feeling, and a Chinese speaker will understand why the depth is there, a non-Chinese speaker won't. And I think that different perspective from different parts of the audience is something that's actually very strong and resonant.
But so just to come back to theatre, you know, do you think theatre itself is changing in the sense of we are using, or you are using, certainly in this show, you know, two or three different medium to tell a story? I mean, I know you've explained it in the context of the authenticity of what your subject matter, but overall...
Yes, I think, you know, we're making theatre in response to the world that we live in, and the world that we live in is increasingly multifarious, you know, both in terms of cultures but also in terms of media, and we're constantly surrounded by electronic images and electronic means of communication. And I think, you know, theatre has actually always been rather technologically obsessed. I mean, even the Greeks, you know, were putting on stage whatever was the latest thing at the time. And Shakespeare certainly did, you know, the quaint device in The Tempest. I think
that's become so embedded as part of theatre culture. Yeah. You don't think that.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're just doing the same thing. I mean, in many ways, it's very traditional. You know, you just take whatever is the way of making. Well, the Festival of Light, you know, theatre's always been about people gathering around the light. And nowadays, light tends to be in the form of projection and you know, sophisticated imagery. But in the end, it's that glowing thing in the middle of the room, and the people gather around it to listen to the story.
And you talked earlier where you said that you'd worked with Hui before.
Yes.
Can you tell us about your other actors, Ning Li and Serge Sorik?
Yes, Serge I've worked with before as well in a play called Double Tongue, which we did back in 2002. He's ended up being in this production because Tony Guilfoyle, who was originally involved in the devising process, is in Cart with Robert Lepage. And actually, I think it's been a really interesting transfer because Tony's a wonderful deviser, and Serge has now added another layer by his arrival and his particular type of presence. It's been very interesting that I deliberately cast someone who I knew well but who was very, very different from Tony. So I thought if we brought in someone who was like Tony, we'd all be just going, oh, he's not really as good as Tony. Whereas if you bring in someone completely different, it's a new type of energy. And so that's been very intriguing. Mm-hmm. Ning Li, this was a challenge because... We knew we needed this bilingual actor, and we knew he needed to be of the same generation as Hui for it to make sense. So Shanghai Dramatic Arts Centre applied themselves, because there's very few people who fit the bill. And eventually they thought of him. He used to be an actor at Shanghai Dramatic Arts Centre and then went to America to study film. And came back and is now a film actor in Beijing. And they thought, aha, maybe. And they phoned him up and he got excited. He'd never done anything like this before. So it was a bit of a leap in the dark all round. But in fact, I think that he's been absolutely wonderful. And the fact that his English is American rather than English is so interesting, because you hear in his voice the complexity of the Chinese accent and the American accent at the same time. And you know, the way he improvises, his English is incredibly fluent, but it isn't quite grammatical. You know, there are little Chinese usages and there's a lot of American usages. And I find that rhythmically very exciting, because all three characters are talking in very, very different ways. So they become very specific, I think.
Well, I mean, the reason why I wanted to ask you that is because, I mean, it hasn't escaped our notice that the Royal Shakespeare Company got embroiled in this controversy about, in inverted commas, well, yellow-facing casting in terms of their approach to casting just three East Asian actors in The Orphan of Chao, which they recently had on. So I was wondering, in the context of that, how do you think theatre companies should be addressing this whole notion of authenticity versus the suspension of disbelief? You know, because you've gone out of your way to get authentic actors, and yet at the same time, we are watching a piece of theatre. You know, so any advice for them for the future?
My
you
advice know, how to make the things better? Well, I just think... I mean, theatre, of course, is a metaphorical space, and, you know, if you just put... so no one, no actor is ever literally playing themselves, or very rarely. However, I think there is also an issue around the right to representation, and internal truth and knowledge. And particularly in a piece like this, where part of being a performer in it is an element of authorship, I think it would be impossible to make a piece like this without people who were authentic. But I also think it's to do with theatre as a collaborative art form, and so often you get this is my sense of China, and I don't want to know your sense of China. I want to know a more complex, nuanced truth, which is going to be around different senses all operating in the same space. You know, theatre in the end is collaboration. It's not one person's view or one big organisational, institutionalised view. It's it needs to be about different voices clashing, because that's dramatic. And it's much harder work. But I think when people are coming from a position of knowledge and truth, then you're more likely to get work which is knowledgeable and truthful and resonant. So that's one argument. I mean, the other thing I would say about The Orphan of Chao is I think the issue in some ways was actually less about the casting and more about the way in which it presented a kind of exoticized East. We can't be still talking in that way in the 21st century. It was like Ming the Merciless. The idea of there being sort of strange, cruel, alien civilizations, and for that to be presented by an almost entirely white cast, I think is the real problem. I think what we have to do as artists, if we're going to carry forward our role, which is to move forward the public debate, then we have to make an engagement on a real level with the other, with China, with Africa, with India, and everywhere else.
So you're saying intercultural work should be truly intercultural, not just superficial.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's not intercultural if it's a superficial graft. You know, it's because there's no inter about it. It's just it becomes cultural imperialism. And, I have a lot of problems with that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get an opportunity to see the particular show, but I've been following some of the debate around it, you know.
I mean, I think it's very good that the debate has been opened.
Yeah.
And very opportune in a way for us, because I think in some ways what we're doing has started to be seen as a bit of a counterblast. And that wasn't a deliberate decision at all, but it's just the two things happen to have coincided in time. And it's very intriguing to see how that's starting to ramify around the blogosphere.
Well, which is useful. So in terms of your own, this particular show, Consumed, will you be hoping to take it to China at some point?
Yes, we are. And the Shanghai Dramatic Arts Centre is very, very keen that it be seen there. And we need to raise a little more money in order to do that. If anyone's listening who has a little more money, it really is only a little more.
Crowdfunding is supposed to be a thing.
Yeah, we'll have a go at everything. But I think it's very important in terms of, you know, the whole artistic journey that it goes back there, because it began there. And the whole point is that it should speak to both a Western and to a Chinese audience.
But you won't change it for China then, in the sense of they will have...
A little bit. Right. The only thing, there are one or two sections, mostly to do with John Tong on the phone, where he will speak to Chinese-speaking characters rather than to English-speaking characters. So
see,
there's
okay.
a little more Chinese language in there. But no, essentially it will remain the same.
So we didn't talk about the music, but would you like to just tell us a little bit about how the music was composed and constructed, because it had a lot of different influences in
yes.
it, you know?
Well, some of the music is found material. That tends to be the music which is in scenes which are pretty much as they were when we improvised them in Shanghai. We then found that we needed sort of more ambient sounds to go with some of the other scenes, particularly, you know, jet lag and the whiskey scene, the things that are happening late at night, where there's a sense of people operating in a
manner.
Yeah, that's very well put, Suman. Thank you. Yes, exactly that. And therefore in a slightly dreamy, slightly heightened state, and music can do that. It provides a space. And so Dave Carey, our composer, started to work electronically, and we were very lucky to meet up with Wan, who is a performer of the traditional, it's like a Chinese violin, and he came to Dave's studio and played a bit, and it was sampled in various ways, and so that traditional Chinese sound is intercut with the electronic, and so you get something very specific in its cultural reference, which makes it feel like you're in China, but you're also so much in a contemporary world. Of course, China is in the contemporary world, but you know what I mean. It has a feeling of the tradition feeding into something which is very now. So the music is also an intercultural collaboration.
Great. Michael Walling, thank you very much for talking to Theatre Voice. And the show Consumed is touring until the end of March.
Indeed, yes. It is. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Not at all. I've enjoyed it.